This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin. We're both a little sleepy, it seems, on this Thursday morning. Less than a week before training camp. Yesterday was the was Wednesday, obviously, and that was a week to go until the veterans report. The Patriots rookies will report on Monday, I believe it is, or maybe even Sunday, and then we're going to go with the veterans on Wednesday, and then it's, you know, full swing ahead. So we're almost there. Football is almost back. And we're going to preview the defensive side of the ball in today's show. We're going to break it up into defensive line, linebackers, and secondary. We're going to try to hit all kind of the big pressure points here. But the place that I wanted to start with, Adam, was the defensive line, which is going through a little bit of a retooling, I would say. You know, Trey Flowers out, Malcolm Brown out, Michael Bennett, Mike Pennell, Chase Winovich all in. So, some of the names are still familiar. I mean, they still have Adam Butler. They still have Lawrence Guy. But without Flowers and Malcolm Brown, I mean, those are two pretty big names over the last couple of years.
Yeah, especially not having Flowers. That's a huge huge loss. But I think, I'm very eager to see what some of these guys can do, especially Pennell.
Yeah.
I've liked what I've seen in terms of film with him. And obviously Winovich was one of our favorite guys in the draft. And Bennett is, somebody that's always really produced. So I'm curious, it's one of those question marks, but I kind of feel pretty confident that some of these guys are going to step in and do pretty well.
Yeah, I think that this group is actually pretty talented across the board and has a lot of potential to be pretty good. Let's start with let's continue with Trey Flowers, though, and replacing him, just exactly how that's going to work out. And I think that really this is what makes Bill Belichick the maestro of general managers in the league, is you watch a guy that you developed, you drafted. It's kind of the theory of you can't re-sign every single good player that you draft, right? It just, cap wise, you just can't do it. And they let Chandler Jones walk a few years ago, or traded him, and then they let Trey Flowers walk this past offseason. And what does Belichick do? He just goes out and he trades for Michael Bennett for half the price. They are going to get a guy that, at least last year, albeit in a different scheme in Philadelphia, produced at a better rate in the pass rush, especially, than Trey Flowers did for the Patriots last year. Yeah. So, for $6.5 million cap hit versus an $18 million cap hit, the Patriots are getting kind of a one-for-one player. Now, Bennett is more of a bridge guy, right? Like, he's getting up there in age, and he's certainly not the future of pass rushers in New England, but he's a very, very good bridge guy until they kind of either draft or develop that next guy.
Yeah, I would say that. And, numbers wise, he's somebody that can put up a fair amount of sacks.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you expect out of him this year, but I think he can be somebody who can pressure the quarterback, get a few sacks here and there, and just be a plus there on that edge. And with some of the other guys they have, I think he's just a good piece to roll out there at the beginning of the season and throughout. But of course, I mean, the guy that I really want to see is Winovich.
Yeah, let's talk about him.
Yeah, and see what he does.
Yeah, so let's talk about Winovich, who, obviously, like you said, we both really liked him in the draft. I think that he is quickly standing out to people that have spoken to him in the media, or just the fans that have kind of observed, as like kind of this guy that's going to come in here and be a fan favorite. Like, I really think that people are really going to love this guy because of the hair and the personality and all that stuff is great. But also on the field, he just plays like his pants are on fire all the time. you know, and he plays with that mean streak and that edge that I think a lot of, you know, is just contagious from top to bottom on a roster. So I think the interesting thing is that for starters, you know, how much does he really play as a rookie, right? I mean, I think we've seen, you know, he's drafted at the end of the third round. We've seen guys in that third or fourth round range, like Trey Flowers, for example, who really didn't play much as a rookie. But we also saw a guy like Dietrich Wise play a pretty good amount as a rookie, as a fourth round pick. So it could go either way.
Yeah. You know, it's at this point, it's hard to put expectations on a guy that's picked where he was, like you said. But
yeah,
I really do think he's got the skill set to contribute early. You know, it's always a learning curve for a guy from college to come to the NFL, especially, you know, he's not a high first round pick or anything like that. So, you know, you're not going to expect him to come in and have 10 sacks, but, you know, he's somebody that when he gets in and, you know, that I feel like can pressure the quarterback, can really just be a handful for offensive linemen trying to block him because of his hand usage and his, you know, just really everything that he brings to the table. You know, and he's not one of these guys that's, you know, that comes off the bus and is just huge.
He's not intimidating looking at all.
Other than the hair. Yeah. He's not, but, technique wise and, you know, with his hands and stuff like that, he really knows what to do out there. So I think, you know, I'm just excited to see, you know, how well his game translates to the NFL. I think it's going to be very good. And so once he gets used to the game and the speed of the game and the power of these offensive linemen, he's gonna start to really produce.
Yeah. So in Michigan and Don Brown, the defensive coordinator there, they had two very, very good edge players, obviously, in Rashawn Gary and Chase. And Chase really outplayed Rashawn Gary last year. But Rashawn Gary is the physical marvel, right, that everybody, you know, drew to during the draft. That being said, they put Chase on the weak side of the formation opposite of the tight end, which seems to be like a great fit for him, I think, long-term here as well. Get him away from those double teams on the edge and allow him to just run and chase after people, because that's really what he did at Michigan. And he got a lot of one-on-ones on the backside there, the formation with the tackle, and that really allowed him to open it up and rush the passer as well on passing downs. You know, the guy that kind of played that role in the Patriots defense last year was John Simon. So if you want kind of like a comparison of what kind of role could look like for Chase, it would be Simon. And Simon really was a passing downs guy for the most part for the Pats last year, you know, 20, 25 snaps a game. So maybe that is where this is headed for Chase in his rookie season, is something like that, a sub-rusher type role. And I think that if that is where we're going, I think he could really shine. But he was a great two-way player at Michigan. I mean, he was a guy that defend the run and the pass. And it really is, I think that his ceiling and his hopefully his development will go in this direction, is that he is a three-down player for the Patriots defense. I don't know if he'll be as a rookie, but eventually. So, you know, he's a player that we both really like. I want to move to the linebackers now. Going level by level here, I think obviously the guy in the linebacking group that's just going to get every single headline and every single note is going to be Jamie Collins. You know, he's going to be kind of one of the more popular guys, I think, during training camp. I mean, listen, I've been hard on Jamie Collins a little bit. What do you think? Do you think there's going to be a career renaissance here? Like, do you think that this guy's really going to turn it around?
You know, I hesitate to really say that he will, just because of how things ended when he left. And also, I think this is a pretty good linebacking core already. You know, I think this is I like what the Patriots have at this group right now. Yeah. And I wouldn't necessarily want to mess with that. Now, does that, you know, mean you don't want to bring in a guy like Collins to compete? No, you always want somebody who can push the other guys and and make, you know, make this group harder to, you know, predict as far as, you know, who makes the team and, you know, and just push these guys to get better. But I don't think he's necessarily, I just don't think he's necessarily needed to take this group to the next level. I think there's a lot of good players in this team for that unit. I think, you know, especially if, you know, Juwan Bentley comes back, you know, fully, fully healthy. I mean, that's a guy that you really, that I'm really most interested to see get back there. You know, I think it's a good group. You got Van Noy, Landon Roberts has really filled his role nicely since, since he's, over the last year, especially. And, with Collins, I think, if he sort of gets back in Bill's good graces and plays the way, he's capable of, sure, he'd be a great asset because athletically he's such a beast. But, I don't think you really have to depend on him, but it's nice to have him in terms of bringing in competition.
Yeah, I think that the thing with Collins is that so far he's saying all the right things, right? He's saying that he realizes that his first time in New England and then in Cleveland, he wasn't making the small sacrifices that you need to make to stick in the NFL. He wasn't, doing the little things properly because he was so focused on making the splash plays. He acknowledges it and he acknowledges that he has to change to kind of, have that career renaissance and to continue his career in the NFL. And I think that the early returns on him have been pretty positive from the coaching staff and stuff like that. So that's all well and good. I just think that, the good thing about Collins, like you said, is obviously his athleticism. He still moves pretty well for a linebacker, especially a guy of his size. So he can still cover a lot of ground and probably cover more ground from sideline to sideline than most of the guys that they have at that position on the roster. But at the same time, when you watch him play in Cleveland, it's the same thing. It's, he's got to take on a pulling guard and he either shies away from it or he tries to slip it. And then, he ends up getting creased in and then it's a huge hole because he's the guy in the gap, right? He's the guy that's supposed to be in that gap. Or when he's dropping in pass coverage, positionally, he's just not very good. I mean, he spot drops in zone and yeah, he can get to all the spots because he is super athletic, but he's either losing concentration of what the route combination is doing, or he's staring in at the quarterback trying to ball hawk and he loses the receiver, or he's not dropping to the right area of his zone and the guy, the receiver ends up catching a pass on. It didn't look the way that it should, especially in Cleveland over the last couple of years. And I think the biggest thing is everyone kind of turns to his tackle numbers in Cleveland and says, he led the team in tackles last year. He had over 100 tackles for the Browns. Well, look at where those tackles were on the field and what those tackles were representing. Were they tackles before the first down marker? Were they run stops? Were they tackles after a receiver caught a ball on him and he just brings the guy down? Those are not good tackles, right? I mean, we can sit here and say that it's impressive that he brought the guy down, but if he brought the guy down after giving up a 20-yard reception, then what are we really talking about here?
Right, right.
He didn't do the first part of the play right. So I think that that's kind of, his tape in Cleveland was not good. I mean, it's just that simple. His tape in Cleveland was not that good. Now, they're saying that he's been playing well and that he's in the playbook and he's doing all the right things now. So we'll see what happens. I just think like you, I think that last year they found a really good rhythm, even without Juwan Bentley. After the first couple of games, they found a really good rhythm with this linebacker group. They understood, everybody understood their roles. Everybody understood what their responsibilities were going to be week to week. They had Hightower and Kyle Van Noy as kind of the near the line of scrimmage guys rushing the passer or stopping the run. They had Landon Roberts on first and second down to come in and stuff the run from an off the ball linebacker position. And then they really just had the safeties like Patrick Chung and the slot corners take care of the receivers, when they had their DBs were covering the receivers and not tight linebackers one-on-one. And that's kind of what turned things around for this defense, I would say, was getting guys like Hightower and Van Noy and Roberts out of pass coverage as much as they possibly could.
Right.
So I guess that Collins could come in and kind of, you know, fix that piece of it, where if you're on a second or a third down, and some teams, like on second down, for instance, are a very pass heavy, especially in today's NFL, on play action, right? Like that's like an automatic play action down. So maybe that's where that he can really be, you know, better off for them than maybe a guy like Landon Roberts is coming in on obvious passing situations. But I just, like you said, I don't know if he really has a spot that they need him in, other than maybe that role, a specialized kind of passing downs role. And and he's going to have to prove that he can shine in pass coverage in order to, you know, stick with that role here. So it's a lot. It's a lot to, you know, kind of to ask for, I think, from a guy that really hasn't played at a starting caliber level in like 2 or 3 years, you know, at the minimum.
Yeah. And yeah, we talked about this a few podcasts ago, but if they brought him in, I'd be curious to see if they could have him as like a pass rusher.
Yeah.
You know, like a third down pass rusher, like just put him on the edge and let him go and see if he could do something like that. I think a role like that, he wouldn't be so bad in.
Yeah, I think that's really, you know, it's going to be a specialized role. I think that they like him a little bit also on special teams, because he is so athletic that he can do some of those things on special teams as well. So I think the question is, though, with him back in the mix is, you know, is someone else, let's assume, you know, it's a big assumption, but let's assume that Jamie Collins is on the roster. Is there someone else that is kind of in jeopardy of now losing their spot because Collins is here? And I kind of look at, we just mentioned him a couple of times, I kind of look at a Landon Roberts and say, well, do they really need Roberts, Bentley, and Collins? And, you know, we're talking about a lot of guys off the ball that are, you know, primarily in that role.
Yeah, I mean, with Roberts, I know a lot of fans have been frustrated with him in the past. I still think he's got a lot of value in terms of being a run-stopping, you know, linebacker on those first two downs. You know, if Collins is on the team, I'm not sure, you know, maybe his job is a little bit more in jeopardy, but, you know, I like Roberts. You know, again, you know, maybe I'm a little biased because he was one of my favorite guys in the locker room when I covered the team. He's a good guy. And, Bentley, man, I that guy really is, you know, I really want to see what he brings.
Yeah, I think Juwan Bentley's a roster lock.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah, but I just think in general, like, I just want to see what he does, you know, like I'm very excited to see what he brings to the table. But with Roberts, I mean, you know, he's not as versatile as some of these other guys. But I think what he does well, and I think that's really valuable.
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously he's a good run stuffer, Landon. And the other thing is, you know, he talked about it with me a lot last year, is just improving against play action, because early on in his career, they would run a play fake and he would just be all over the place, right?
Yeah.
And he would have no idea what was going on and really get stuck in the middle. And he said that, you know, it was really about kind of understanding what some of the core concepts were off of play action for a lot of these teams, which is a lot of the same stuff. Like, it's not like all these teams are like running a bunch of different play action schemes. It's really, you know, probably 8 to 10 different things. And from each opponent, you can kind of pick out like 2 or 3 favorites, right? So he started to realize that, you know, when I see play action, all I got to do is turn and run to a spot, right? Wherever I think that the guy is going to go, or wherever I'm picking up that the guy is going to go, or just play, you know, your assignment and just know that that's your zone or that's your man or whatever the case may be. So he really started to kind of pick up more on the mental aspect of the game, and it really did show on the tape last year. I mean, there's a lot of examples where it's play action. It's like, let's call it the play action bootleg, and the crosser is coming across, and you see Roberts there dropping right underneath the crosser to take it away. You know, I can show you 5 or 6 plays of him doing that pretty well last year, especially compared to what he was doing like his first 2 years in the league. It's like night and day. So I think that, you know, he's really improved. Bentley, I mean, for a rookie, he just, from the preseason on, it was apparent that he was way better than his draft status.
Way better.
Like, it was pretty crazy. Like, the first training camp practice on, he was clearly a starting linebacker. Like, yeah. He was clearly a guy that was going to be at least a role player, and if not a starting linebacker down the road. I think it's just what's incredible with him is the lack of false stepping that he does for a rookie. I mean, both against the run and the pass, this is a guy that every single step is calculated, and he knows exactly what pursuit angle and where he's going at all times, which is, for a guy that young, is just insane. Yeah. So you put that on top of the fact that he's a big physical dude that can really, you know, be aggressive and come downhill at the line of scrimmage and make tackles on the running back and stuff like that. And you got a really good linebacker. I mean, that's what we saw in the first 3 weeks of last season. So this is a really, it's a good group, I think, because it's got a role for everybody right now. And everybody, you know, they have Hightower and Van Noy, more on the ball guys. They got Roberts and Bentley as off the ball guys, more like on first and second down probably. And then if Collins sticks, they can bring Collins in on third down and have him be like a situational pass rusher / coverage guy. So that's, I mean, this is as good as the linebackers have looked, I think, since like peak Hightower and Collins together in like 2014.
Yeah.
You know, which is pretty, I think it's a very good thing, because really, I mean, not that it was a weak point last year, but they're just keep on getting better at linebacker. And now you combine that with what they have in the secondary and the defensive line, and, you know, we're starting to talk about a pretty good defense on paper, at least.
Very good. Very good.
So let's move to that secondary. I think the biggest thing is just, there's just numbers, man. There's just a lot of guys at safety. There's a lot of guys, but there's especially a lot of guys at corner. So the way that I look at it right now is that they are six deep at cornerback with Stephon Gilmore, Jason McCourty, J.C. Jackson. Now I'm going to forget all of them. Juwan Williams, Jonathan Jones. And of course, I'm forgetting the sixth one.
Duke Dawson.
Duke, thank you. Yeah, Duke Dawson. As soon as I started listing them, they all just like vanished out of my head.
And then there's Keon, but I mean, if you're using him maybe as a special teams, you might throw him in a special teams specialist category.
So. Yeah, so I was talking to Mike Giardi about this at minicamp, because he had said something kind of vague on Twitter about how the Patriots view, you know, a bunch of guys as special teams only guys. So I was kind of, he knew exactly the name. So I was kind of guessing to see if what he would give me. And he, when I said Keon, he kind of like gave me a look like, yeah, like Keon's probably a guy that they view as probably not a corner long-term, but maybe emergency corner, but more of a special teams guy.
Yeah.
But with that said, if he kind of gets better and, you know, makes this team, that's still technically seven cornerbacks
that
they're carrying on this team. I mean, is there an odd man out? I don't know, you know, if there is, but maybe a trade at the position, because I don't think you can cut any of these guys.
No.
Besides Keon. I mean, if they cut Keon, I could understand that, but you're not going to cut Duke Dawson. You're not going to cut Jonathan Jones. So, I mean, where do they go with this group?
I don't know, because the reason why is, like, you know, I would say Dawson, but they drafted him in the second round last year.
Yeah, it just was surprising.
They can't do that. And, you know, they haven't really given him much chance on the field because, you know, his injury last year. And then, you know, after that, he was just sort of a healthy scratch, right? So, so you know, and he could be something. Once Chung retires or something like that, you know, take on that specific role. So it really is hard when you look at these guys, all these guys you can look at and say, okay, I can see where they fit, especially somebody like J.C. Jackson. You know, he came on and did so well last year, and really just exceeded everybody's expectations. I don't think anybody had really high expectations.
I don't think anybody had any expectations.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he came in and did, and I think he did very well, you know, so you got to keep him, you know. Jonathan Jones is another guy who I think is a really solid, you know, third corner when they want him to be. So really it's hard. I you know, maybe they keep all those guys, and it's not a bad thing to have a lot of good corners. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe they do keep them, but that's just really, you know, knocking somebody off from another part of the roster, from maybe a place where they feel deep anyway. They feel like they have good depth anyway. So, you know, it's hard to see them keeping all those guys from just pure numbers, but like, if you go over each guy, then who really do you take off the team? I you know, at my, you know, when I look at it, I just can't really see who that person is.
Yeah. So, I mean, numbers wise, like you said, the math of it, when you tried to put together a 53 man roster to keep six or seven corners, it does make it tough. You know, it makes it tough. You're going to be thin out another spot if you do that. It's just, that's just the kind of the math of it. But at the same time, if it was me, and I think we all try to kind of get in Bill Belichick's head a little bit and see where we see value. And they certainly have some value with some of these younger corners that if they did want to go out and make a trade to bolster another position, it makes sense, right? You know, they wanted to, Jonathan Jones only on a 1-year deal. They could take Jonathan Jones and ship him off and get a tight end or get a tackle. They could take, they could sell high on a guy like J.C. Jackson. I don't think they will do that, but they could sell high on him, and they could, you know, potentially get a very good player in return if in a package deal of like J.C. Jackson and a pick. That could bring back a pretty good player, you know, and maybe that is beneficial to them. But I personally would keep all of them. Right. And the main reason is because they're all different. They're really all different. I mean, Stephon Gilmore's in his own kind of category. So, you know, he's an all pro corner and maybe the best corner in the league. So he can do it all, right? But everybody else has a very specific, specialized role that I think is really valuable to the team. Jason McCourty is just the heady veteran that, like in the Super Bowl, played a ton of snaps because he can play zone and man at a high level. And you can trust him to do that. Jonathan Jones is very multi-talented. He's a versatile player. He obviously played a little bit of safety in the Super Bowl. But I think the biggest thing about him is that, assuming that he's going to be on the field next year, you got to think about Tyreek Hill, right? And you got to think, like, what are we going to do with Tyreek Hill? You're going to play them once in the regular season. The all signs point to probably a rematch at some point in the playoffs also. And he did just a fantastic job in the AFC Championship game with Tyreek Hill along with Devin McCourty. So they have to have a track guy, right? They have to have a guy that runs a 4-2-5 that can keep up with the guy, whether it's Tyreek Hill. They're going to play the Eagles this year, so they have DeSean Jackson on the schedule. They have a couple of different speedy guys on the schedule that they have to worry about that, you know, are mainly just speedsters like a Hill or Jackson and not an all-around receiver that's going to go to Gilmore, for example.
Yeah.
So that's his role. Duke Dawson, like you said, is kind of like the Patrick Chung in waiting, I think, and he has more bulk to him than John Jones does, and he can held up in the box against the run. Juwan Williams is the big guy, right? Like he's you know, just long and tall for days. So you can put him against like a guy like a Mike Williams or a bigger receiver or even like a Travis Kelce if they want to go that route. So every single one of these guys has a specific skill set that's really, really valuable to the team. And you, when you go down cornerback at this point, and I think that what's great about the position in football now is that it has become really about matchups. Like we realize now that cornerback is not that much different than a, you know, another sport like basketball, for example, where you're just going to guard, you know, what you have your stopper and Stephon Gilmore and you know what I mean? Like everybody kind of matches up. And the analytics have kind of come out now where, like, all these target-based stats, you can kind of see that. So having a guy that can cover every single type of receiver in the secondary is extremely valuable to the team. And I think that that's kind of how Bill Belichick builds the secondary, too, is looking at, okay, this is our schedule this year. We have a bunch of big guys. We have a bunch of fast guys. We're going to need to have guys that match up against those guys.
Yeah.
And that's really it's smart. It's the right way of doing it, and they drafted Juwan Williams, and you know, I think that he's probably best on the boundary long term, but in the short term, like if he covered Travis Kelce and then Zach Ertz when they played Philadelphia, like that's also a great role for him.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of funny. We're looking at this thing here and it's a very first world problem.
Yeah.
We're basically saying they have too many good cornerbacks.
It's in today's NFL, like this is exactly what you want. You want to have too many good corners. Like
yeah.
You can never have too many good players in the secondary.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, you know, maybe they get rid of this guy, maybe they get rid of that guy, but like they're in a really good spot and like in the secondary as a whole.
Yeah.
Like and just like the linebackers, you just the whole defense. This is, you know, they're in a very good spot. They have a very good defense. I think, you know, this is sort of, you know, what you want going into training camp.
They have waves and waves of guys, honestly, and I know that sounds like a homer take or whatever, but they have so much depth on, like, they might be able to go too deep on defense at a lot of these positions. Like, they're going to have, like, 20 to 21 NFL caliber starters on defense.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And you know, I think that with the secondary, I was kind of thinking about this a little bit last night because somebody asked me on Twitter, is this the best secondary in the NFL? And I think when you look at it, I would personally put them in the top tier with the Chargers. The Chargers have a really good secondary too with Dez King and Casey Hayward and obviously Derwin. So that secondary might be maybe Derwin and Casey Hayward, their top two might be a little bit better than the Patriots' top two. But the depth, they don't have the depth that the Patriots have. They don't have three safeties and six cornerbacks that they can play and feel good about. And the Bears were kind of the other team I was thinking about, but they lost Adrian Amos and they lost their slot corner and Bryce Callahan, and they downgraded at both of those spots with HaHa, Clinton Dix, and Buster Screen. So I think the Patriots might have the best secondary in the league.
They really could. And
yeah,
it's pretty, you know, it's one of those things where no matter what they do in these, you know, if they make a trade or whatever, they're in a really good spot.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Obi before we get out of here. Obviously in mini camp, he was kind of one of those guys that was standing out to a lot of people. He looks really comfortable in the defense. I'll say that. It looks, you know, Philip Dorsett said it last year that when you come in like mid swing like that, Dorsett came in the beginning of the season, but he had missed all training camp with the Patriots. It's really not until that following season where you start to feel comfortable in the playbook. So now it looks like that kind of same thing happened with Obi. Now, he was playing a ton in minicamp because Patrick Chung was still hurt. So right. that you know, it wasn't really necessarily that he had elevated to that spot. But they did see – he looked like he was in the mix, and he looked like the type of guy that thought that he was in the mix, if that makes sense. So, I mean, do you think he makes the roster? What do you think – you know, should we have any expectations for him? What are your thoughts?
It's hard for me to put any expectations on a guy like Obi because it's, you know, I there's so few spots.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody like him. So he'd really have to stand out in the preseason, in my opinion. But he's got a lot of physical tools that you're looking for. He's a big guy in terms of height and everything like that. And, I'd like to see him make, you know, the team, especially as a local product. But, you know, it's just tough. Like, you know, like we said with the cornerbacks, with you know, with where he is, there's a numbers crunch, you know what I mean? So I think, you know, I think he's good enough to make I think he's good enough to make a lot of teams. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, where they see him, if they think, you know, him being sort of a younger guy, they want to invest in early. So I think he's good enough to make the team. It's just a matter of numbers and, you know, whether they think, you know, he can fit in.
Yeah, I think that he's the toughest guy to find a roster spot for.
Right.
You know, when I do my 53-man projection after minicamp, and I've kind of been tinkering with it since, just on these off-season days, and it's really hard to find a spot for him. He's the one guy that I keep on like putting as the 54th man.
Right.
You know, like he's that one guy. And obviously you can cut some of these special teams guys if you want and say like, oh, I think that Obi's going to make it over Terrence Brooks, for example, or Obi's going to make it over Nate Ebner. And yeah, those are all possible, but we just know how much Bill Belichick values special teams.
Right.
And it seems like Brooks in particular is a guy that they signed right away in free agency because the special teams wasn't as good as they wanted it to be last year. And they clearly identified him as a guy that could come in and fix that, you know, and they obviously brought back Brandon Bolden also. So right. they have clearly emphasized after a down year on special teams last year, getting that unit fixed, or at least a down year in terms of their coverage units. The punter and the kicker still had a pretty good year. It was just kick coverage in particular that was not as good as it should have been. So I think that there is some element to Obi being a much better safety than those guys are. Like if you have to put him on the field and on defense, I think he's going to be a much more valuable piece in that regard. But in terms of special teams, he can play a little bit on special teams, but he's not a special teams specialist like those dudes are. So I think that that's going to be the biggest difference for him is how many of those guys do they keep. Right now, you know, they could keep up to six guys that are really only going to be primarily special teamers that aren't the snapper, the kicker, and the punter. So it's a lot of guys at that spot. So
right.
We'll see what happens with Obi. I think you, like you said, he's plenty good enough to make the team. But again, every time I do a projection, he's the 54th guy. Right. And let's see what happens though. Like if there's always injuries, unfortunately. So some one of those 53 guys that I keep on putting on obviously could get hurt or get traded or surprise cut or whatever the case may be. All right, that was fun. This defense is a lot of fun to talk about, and I'm sure we're going to talk a ton about it during the season. And I really have high expectations for this unit. Like I think that this team, you know, I don't know where they'll finish stats wise and stuff. I know everybody loves points per game allowed because Belichick only talks about that, but I'm hoping that this team is going to be a top 10 DVOA defense. Like, yeah. I really think that that is something that they can do where they're not just kind of keeping teams out of the end zone, but kind of like more like they were doing at the end of last year where they were actually taking it to teams and they were being a factor. I think that that's what we would all like to see. All right. Is there anything that you would like to tease? We are now done completely with our position previews. We did the offense. You can go check those podcasts out. We just did the defense. And, we're almost ready to go here.
Just with Mass Varsity this weekend, there's going to be more passing league stuff. Last weekend was great as far as that was concerned. The South Regional and this Northeast 7-on-7 was a lot of fun. And this week there's going to be the East Regional. You saw some really outstanding players. Cole Finney from Hingham is going to Duke and is about 6'6", 6'7", is crazy big. Really a cheat code out there. And then there's a kid from Brockton named Navon Reed, who's about 6'4", 6'5", about 200 pounds, give or take. You know, just really a smooth operator out there, has great hands. No offers as of yet, but that's temporary in my opinion. And, there's just, a lot of talent out there to check out at these things. And, these are just good things to watch before the season actually starts.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. We're almost there, right? I mean, I keep on saying it, but we're almost at college football season. Is obviously a little bit before NFL season, and then we got high school and NFL, and we're football is almost back. And if you cannot tell, I cannot wait because I am dying over here with all this off season talk. It's just what's your QB rankings? Who has the best run defense in the NFL? The Browns hype, like
the Browns hype is incredible.
Let's just play the games.
I love the Browns hype. It's so much fun.
I think it's great because, you know, talent wise they're loaded. I mean, they're
unbelievable.
Loaded. Yeah, unbelievable. Like, there's no doubt about it. But we've you know, it's the Browns first of all, and second of all, we've seen teams kind of load up like this in the past, and it doesn't always work out.
No, you know? It doesn't. No.
Yeah, so I we'll see what happens. The point is, there are going to be some unhappy people in Cleveland that aren't getting the ball enough. Right, like right. I think Odell and Jarvis Landry are going to get plenty of targets, but if it's David Njoku or if it's one of the running backs, like somebody in Cleveland's going to get unhappy. That's right. that's just the point, you know, kind of how that works. On clnsmedia.com, I'm also doing written position previews before camp here, so you can go check that out today. I released the tight ends, which after writing it up where it was pretty depressing, to be honest with you. And then next week we'll be out at training camp. Full bore, me, Sierra Goodwill, Alex Barth will be there. I'm sure Trags will come down for a few days as well. So we'll have videos, I'll have camp observations, I'll have stories, you know, the works. So we got a big plan for training camp. We're going to hit the ground running this year. It is my first year covering the full camp. So that's exciting.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, obviously, we just did all these positions, and it's looking pretty good for the Patriots. We got one more show before camp starts. We're going to do a training camp preview show, more just generic big picture topics. And, you know, obviously we'll get probably in the weeds because that's what we do here on Patriots All 22. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.